Pardon.
And I had to.
Seeing a quorum present, I call to order this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee. First of all, I want to say welcome back, members. It's good to be back in a new year and a new room for at least this meeting as we figure out where our next home is during the work that we have to do for the reconstruction and refurbishment of the state office building. So we will keep you updated on where our permanent location is, and we're trying to maintain our capability of hearing remote testimony, and we know for our education committee this has been something that we've really depended on. We do appreciate the number of people that have been able to stay in their hometown, stay in their school buildings, and still come and speak to the legislature and make sure their voice is heard. So we are fortunate enough today that we do have that capability in this room. It could be that some of the other committees might be using it in the future, so we will keep keep tabs on that in terms of when we will be able to allow for remote testimony or when we're like the other committees that don't get to do that. So we might have to take turns this time. But today we do have that capability, and we do welcome it, and we do have some remote testifiers that will be on. All right, before we actually get into the main business that we have today, we do have some business left over from 2023. We have minutes that need to be approved. So, Representative Berg, if you've had a moment to look at the minutes, would you make the motion?
Madam Chair, Yes, Madam Chair, I have looked at the minutes, and I move them for approval.
All right. Any discussion of the minutes of March 22nd, 2023? Representative Erdl.
Thank you. Could I have some of the highlights of the minutes from that meeting? I don't remember, Representative Berg.
Your memory does not stretch back to March 22nd of 2023?
No, I don't remember. I will let it go.
You were there. I think so. I think that's probably enough said. All right.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Thank you. I don't remember this meeting because I truly wasn't there, but I do believe I should be listed as excused. That was a day I was sick.
Okay.
If you could add that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bennett, Lead Bennett. I appreciate that correction to our meeting. And yes, I'm sure you read the minutes before that and we're up to date on it. All right. Hearing no further discussion, a motion is before us to approve the minutes of March 22nd. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you, committee. We remember what we're doing, right? It's fallen into place. All right. So as you all know, we have an important bill on the docket today that we're going to hear. It's House File 3489. And this is it's something that I know that's been worked on pretty intensively since we last met. We started out with passing – it actually came from the governor's office and the governor bills – trying to address this issue that we want all students to be safe in our schools. We want all people to be safe in our schools. So we care about the safe and supportive schools we have right now. And to address that – we'd had some legislation around excessive use of force, reasonable use of force in school that dealt with school resource officers as well as other people that work and attend school and are in our school buildings. Now, after we passed that legislation, which actually went through pretty smoothly, not actually very little discussion, if any discussion in the House when we heard the bill, afterwards, a group of people took a look at it and said, you know, we think that we need more clarification. There seems to be conflicting statutes addressing this reasonable use of force, particularly around the school resource officers. So taking a look at that, we looked to see, is there an easy way to fix it? I was involved in the discussion that looked for an easy fix, did not find an easy fix, because it turns out much of this is embedded in different parts of the statute. And that there's a lot involved in making what we had hoped to be a simple change and was not a simple change. So after much discussion to come up with the draft of the bill, then much discussion working with more stakeholders to understand how we can best address this and build on what we did last year, we do have something in front of us now that we will be considering. And one way of understanding this is especially the confusion of it, the Attorney General did issue an opinion addressing part of the legislation from last year, relevant to the legislation this year, saying that at no point had we banned the use of prone restraints, which is one area of contention right now, for school resource officers, that, in fact, there's one standard for school resource officers for using these kinds of restraints. And this bill, among the other things that it does, codifies that understanding that the Attorney General gave us. But this bill does more than that, because it is an important issue. It is a complex issue, and it is an issue of vital importance to our students, to our parents, and to the folks that work in the school. It's an issue about public safety, but it's also an issue about a nurturing and supportive environment for all students. And so I would like to ask our bill author to begin the discussion of House File 3489. And I will say, members, our intention is to re-refer this bill to Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee after we hear it today. So, Representative Frazier, when you are settled in, would you like to make the motion to re-refer House File 3489 to Public Safety, Finance, and the Policy Committee?
That is my motion, Chair. Thank you.
All right. And Representative Frazier, if you would introduce yourself to the committee and to the members that are and people that are attending today, and begin with the presentation of your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Representative Frazier, District 43A, covers the cities of New Hope and Crystal in the northwest suburbs, the very happening northwest suburbs, I might add. Chair, thank you for the introduction, and good evening to everyone that is here, all of the folks that have come to testify. We appreciate you being here, and we're looking forward to the conversation. Chair, what I'm going to do is I'm going to provide a brief overview, but in large part what I want to do is provide a few comments just to add context as to why we're here tonight. And then I'm going to turn it over to nonpartisan staff to do a walkthrough of the bill, and then we will go on through the agenda from there, if that is okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, we are not far removed from the tragic murder of George Floyd, and in the wake of Floyd's murder, this legislator passed bipartisan legislation to avoid a repeat of that tragedy. Specifically, we banned chokeholds and compressive holds outright via Statute 609, the statute that governs use of force for peace officers. This is a critical point to understand for our SRO discussion. The tension and anxiety that has been discussed in large part stems from the egregious visual of that tragic day. So currently, peace officers are not allowed to use chokeholds or compressive holds in the regional force continuum. To put it simply, prior to 2023 and currently, if an SRO puts a pupil in a prone position and applied pressure in a manner that restricts breathing, that officer would be in violation of the law. That is what the current law is and was before 2023. Now, being a public servant requires us to listen to the public we serve. This bill complies with that duty. It mandates that we include the voices of all stakeholders. We continue to have the opportunity to be a model for the country and the world on how we continue to deal with the reckoning after the murder of George Floyd. This bill actively seeks to act on policies that make the state safer for all Minnesotans. In this instance, we are zeroed in on our young people, the core of our future. Our only focus must be doing everything we can to ensure that while our young people are in our schools, that we ensure that their environment is safe from any type of harm. We must ensure that our young people have the best environment to have the best possible outcomes. Your Honor, with that, Your Honor, Chair.
I'm okay. As long as you don't call me Senator, I'm
Chair. Chair, with those opening remarks, I will turn it over to nonpartisan staff to do a walkthrough of the bill, and then after that, I have a few more comments.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. I will turn to a guest nonpartisan staff, Mr. Ben Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, Ben Johnson from House Research. I'm going to do a section-by-section walkthrough. Sections 1 and 2 of the bill work together to say that a school resource officer is not an employee or agent of a school for the purposes of the statute addressing corporal punishment and certain holds. That takes us to Section 3. Section 3 begins on page 2 at line 12. Section 3 removes the word imminent from the description of when teachers and principals can use reasonable force to prevent bodily harm or death to a student or another, and makes conforming changes in two paragraphs that involve an annual report. Section 4 is similar to those first two sections and says that for the purposes of that particular statute, a school resource officer is not an employee or agent of the school. Sections 5 and 6, which are on page 3 from line 7 through line 16, work together as well. They say that both school boards and charter school boards must enter into a contract if they choose to have an SRO program. Sections 7 and 8 are in Chapter 609, which is generally the criminal code. These two sections of law provide situations when reasonable force is authorized under Minnesota law. The changes in these two sections are very similar, and what it does is it takes teachers out of the provisions that apply to parents, guardians, and other lawful custodians and group them with other school officials. In Section 8, there's an additional paragraph that says that nothing in that particular section limits any authorization to use reasonable force, including the authorizations in 121A.582 as well as 609.06, which are the two sections that have caused the most discussion related to this issue. Moving on to Section 9, this is the largest section.
Recording in progress.
This is the largest section of the bill. This creates a new definition and series of requirements related to school resource officers. I'm going to do a quick subdivision walkthrough in this section. The first subdivision creates that definition of school resource officer. The second subdivision identifies and creates the duties for school resource officers. It also states that schools are free to contract for additional duties that are not included on that list. This brings us to page 6. Page 6, subdivision 3, talks about the training required for school resource officers. Beginning June 1st, 2025, any officer who is assigned to serve as a school resource officer must undergo specific training. The next few paragraphs create a few exceptions to that. Some officers will have already received national training and local training. Those individuals are effectively grandfathered in and can keep that training as their training until June 1st, 2027. By that time, they must update any training. Paragraphs C and D apply to school resource officers who either begin work when they have not had an opportunity to complete the training, in which case they have a 6-month grace period to complete the training, and to officers who are basically serving as substitutes for fewer than 60 contact days. In both of those cases, those individuals are not required to perform all of the duties. There are some duties related to notifying schools about potential safety risks and things like that. Those are not required of those individuals who have not yet undergone the training. Subdivision 4, which is at the bottom of page 6, lays out the requirements for the training course. It carries over onto page 7, and you'll see that there are 13 components that are required to be part of this training course. It also, again, allows the Peace Officers Standard and Training Board to create a supplemental training course for those individuals who have undergone training that covers most of these issues, but perhaps not all of them. Subdivision 5, which is at the bottom of page 7, requires the post board to develop a model policy. That policy must be developed in consultation with several groups, including law enforcement groups, education groups, and some community groups. That model policy has specific requirements that you can see listed on page 8. There are 7 items that must be in the model policy. Subdivision 6 requires local law enforcement agencies to adopt their own policies that either match or are in substantial compliance with that model policy. Then subdivision 7 provides for licensing sanctions and injunctive relief. That would apply if there's a violation of the model policy or if a law enforcement agency fails to adopt a policy. But finally, Madam Chair, is Section 10. Section 10 is an appropriation. There's an appropriation to the Department of Public Safety. This is to hire some new staff and provide this updated school resource officer training. Total amounts are $150,000 in fiscal year 24 and $490,000 in fiscal year 25. That $490,000 a year amount is an ongoing appropriation. And as a final note, all of these sections are effective the day following final enactment. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I believe at this point, we know that we're an education committee, and we do not have a lot of knowledge at this point about public safety and what the post board is. The host board being the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. And so I believe, Representative Frazier, that you will be able to fill us in more knowledge about what that entity is, since it's integral to the work that you have in this. Their work will be integral to what we're doing in this bill. And I think it does have an impact on our understanding of what we can expect for our students going forward by understanding what this model policy might be coming from the post board. So, Representative Frazier, if you would please introduce your testifier on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I'd like to introduce the Executive Director, Eric Missou, of the post board.
Would you please introduce yourself for the record and begin with your testimony?
Certainly. Eric Missoult, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. I don't have, other than to just generally educate you about the post board, I don't have a lot to say in particular with regard to the bill. Post board is a regulatory and licensing agency. We oversee the licenses of all peace officers in the state of Minnesota. And that includes everything from covering pre-service, learning objectives and training, through continuing education, which this bill has a piece of it that would impact continuing education, for SROs at least, right up to ensuring policy compliance, which is also a piece of this bill, and then enforcing standards of conduct and potential misconduct violations under licensure. So we function very much just like the lawyers board or the nursing board or any other medical boards in terms of as a licensing board. With regard to this particular bill, this is pretty standard for us, for the post board. We have multiple mandatory model policies that have been mandated by the legislature over time. And depending on the bill, various ways of implementing that or descriptions of how we're to implement that. And they often do describe the people that are the groups that we're supposed to work with to build those together, and we would do the same in this case. Also, with regard to the learning objectives, another pretty common effort on our half, where we set the learning objectives, again, working with stakeholders. In this case, it's the school safety center, and then promulgate those. And that's about it. That's what we do.
Thank you. Thank you. And we might draw on your expertise in the future, but appreciate your testimony right now.
Very good.
All right. If this is acceptable to our bill author, Representative Frazier, we'll go on to public testimony. And have I moved the bill? Did we move the bill before us?
We did.
Okay, we did. Good. So public testimony on the bill that is before us right now. And I want to remind all our testifiers, we did have a number of people that did want to sign up and be heard today, and we appreciate the testimony, but we're asking everyone to limit themselves to 2 minutes, and we will start timing to make sure that everyone has that same guideline and can adhere to it. But I would like to begin with, first of all, let's see, our commissioners, both Commissioner Jett and Commissioner Jacobson, if you would be able to move up to the podium now. Thank you. And yes, Commissioner Jett, if you would, if you will be our first testifier. All right. I will call on Commissioner Willie Jett of the Department of Education. Thank you for being with us today.
Madam Chair, members, good afternoon. My name is Willie Jett, Commissioner of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to provide thoughts on this bill. Before we begin, I want to express my gratitude to the individuals and organizations who provided thoughtful input over the last few months, Also, I want to thank the authors, legislators, and members of the administration for their collaborative work. While our perspectives on this bill may vary, I appreciate our common focus and commitment to prioritize the health, safety, and well-being of our students and school communities. As some of you know, I spent many years serving as a school and district administrator. Part of our work as school administrators is to ensure the safety of our school environments. Often, our school administrators and behavior staff are able to de-escalate situations because that's what we are trained to do. However, we occasionally require assistance from our law enforcement partners, specifically school resource officers, if there are significant safety concerns. I'd like to share a real-life experience or a real-life moment. A group of high school students squared off at lunchtime, the cafeteria packed with students. One student drew a knife out of his pocket, flashing it at the opposing group. The school resource officer stepped into that situation, facing the student with the knife. She talked calmly and firmly to the student, directing him away from the confrontation. Because of the past relationships built, the SRO was able to convince the student to go with her to the office while the school administrators worked with the other students. They were fortunate to have a connected, well-trained SRO in this situation, which could have otherwise gone very badly. SRO programs, when done well, are rooted in relationships that prioritize health, safety, and support of young people. This bill ensures all SROs throughout the state have the training necessary to create the relationships demonstrated in this real-life example. SROs are viewed by many as essential to maintaining safe and secure learning environments, and data from the 2022 Minnesota Student Survey tells us that an overwhelmingly majority of students from all demographic areas value the SROs in their schools. For 9 years, I served as the superintendent in the St. Cloud area schools. We spent those years in partnership with our local police departments to co-create the roles, responsibilities, and guide rails for our school resource officers. Together, we prioritize safety, which stems from relationships and connection. We focus on clarity and consistency of roles, including restorative practices and community-based non-punitive supports and responses. We all recognize that SROs in schools can be a complicated conversation that require honest and careful consideration, and it's essential that we provide clarity through this bill to ensure the health and safety of our school communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next, we will call on Commissioner Bob Jacobson from the Department of Public Safety. And please introduce yourself for the records and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, authors of this bill. I am Bob Jacobson. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. I've just finished up my first year in this role, and it is a real honor to serve the state of Minnesota and Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan as the Commissioner of Public Safety. Just a little bit of background. I spent 33 years in law enforcement. Many of those as the chief of police in the city of New Brighton, had school resource officers beginning in 1992 that worked under my supervision and worked alongside the Mountain View School District as well for many, many years. My father was also an educator, 34 years as a school principal and school superintendent. I learned a lot about education from my father, and I also learned a lot about safety of children and the well-being of children from my father, who served in that role, again, for many, many years. I believe that SROs are valuable members of school communities. I believe that they forge positive relationships with students and adults in our school buildings. Based on the results of the 2022 student survey, the vast majority of students think it's a good idea to have an SRO in the school and will talk to an SRO about something illegal or unsafe. An SRO is another responsible adult in the school. This SRO bill that's in front of the committee today represents a comprehensive proposal. It creates clear duties for SROs in schools. It provides training requirements that are focused on school settings and working with students. It offers free training options for law enforcement for this training. It requires, as you've heard discussed, a post-board model policy that will incorporate broad input from Minnesotans, including those working in education, law enforcement, and community groups. This policy will cover a lot of topics, but the one that I believe is most important is focusing on building constructive relationships between SROs, students, and educators. This bill also makes it clear that SROs are not allowed to be involved in school discipline. That is something that has been best practice included in training for many years, including with the SROs that I supervised. Putting this into law makes that clear. And if a community so chooses to have an SRO, this bill will help ensure a higher standard in specialized training. And so in closing, Chair Pryor and members of the committee, I believe every child deserves a learning environment that is safe, supportive, and healthy, and I believe this bill will help accomplish that. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Commissioner Jacobson. At this point, committee members and audience members, we're going to use our two, we're going to have two testifiers that are testifying remotely, so we're going to take just a briefest of pause to make sure that this is set up correctly and that we can go into the public testimony. That's the remote testimony. So if people need to get up and stretch. And do you have a question, Representative Baker?
Yeah, I just have a question for Commissioner Jacobson. So whether that's now or when we take up the DEI.
I think that we'll proceed with the public testimony, then we'll take up the DE, and then we'll return to the bill and can take questions and discussions at the bill at that point. And so,
perfect. I just wanted to
make a note. Make a note and remember your question. And I believe that Commissioner Jacobson will be able to stay through the hearing and be able to answer later on. So thank you for the placeholder there. All right. As I said, let's be on pause for a moment. And all right, members and audience members, it looks like we are set to go, and we have three testifiers that will be testifying before us remotely. We're going to go first to a student, and I'm going to introduce her as Sarah, and I will call out, Sarah, are you on with us right now, and do you want to unmute, and we'll switch the screen that we have here in the room, is that correct? Okay, so changing that, different testifier, and Ellie is from, is also school. Finding out who's ready on our remote side. All right, if Ellie, Alo Anle is on right now. We're going to hear from you first, And Ali is Youth Advocate, Education for Liberation Minnesota, public testifier. And if you can unmute yourself and introduce yourself again for the record, we would love to hear your testimony. And again, I will remind that we're looking for 2 minutes of testimony today.
Got it. Hi, everyone. Ali Alawanle, parent educator, youth advocate. Thank you for having me here. I'm going to jump into it. I'll try to be as brief as possible with the 2 minutes. So in 2019, the U.S. Department of Education ranked Minnesota the worst out of 50 states in the nation for racial disparities. The data for discipline in schools is similar, ranking Minnesota the second worst state in the nation for racial and disability disparities for discipline in schools. So when we're looking at who is impacted most by dangerous holds and restraints, we know it's our Black, Brown, and Indigenous students. Yet we haven't engaged these students or their families in the decision-making around this legislature to reverse the chokehold ban. According to Minnesota Department of Human Rights, during the 2019 school year in Minnesota, 11% of enrolled students were Black and 1.6% were American Indian. However, these students represent 18% and 5% of students referred to law enforcement through the school discipline process. Multiple districts' quarterly discipline data, advisory council evaluations and recommendations, and research conducted by education experts have led to numerous recommendations that were published by the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. As I read through these recommendations, I want you to note how this proposed legislation of reversing the chokehold ban goes against every single one of these recommendations. One, advance state policies that decrease race and disability discipline disparities. Two, focus on shifting adult behavior instead of targeting and sometimes criminalizing student behavior. Three, reduce the use of school resource officers when making discipline decisions. Four, prioritize educator training that focuses on building capacities and skills such as social-emotional learning, positive behavior interventions and supports, anti-bias education, and non-exclusionary discipline. Five, develop regularly review and publish policies regarding the use of school resource officers based on best practices in school safety, social-emotional learning, conflict resolution, discipline, use of force, and tactical de-escalation. Six, regularly evaluate the implementation and impact of how and when school resource officers are used in responding to student behavior and discipline. Seven, the state should advance a comprehensive package of legislation that supports more inclusive and welcoming school environments to intentionally decrease race and disability discipline disparities for Minnesota students. Eight, the state can continue to support its work to end disparities by working in collaboration with schools.
I apologize, but you may have heard that that was the 2 minutes. So if you can wrap up the testimony and bring it home for us. Thank you.
Yep, I will wrap it up. So as you can see, the nation ignores all. What was that? Can I wrap it up?
Yes, please. Yes, that's what,
okay.
That's what I
sorry. Say. So sorry. As you can see, this new legislation ignores all the data and recommendations. If that's not enough, the U.S. Government Accountability Office found hundreds of cases of abuse and death related to the use of prone restraint. The U.S. Department of Education stated prone restraints or other restraints that restrict breathing should never be used because they can cause serious injury or death. Instead of working towards reinstating policies and practices that harm our children and continue the racial disparities in our schools, we need to be investing time, energy, and funding into restorative practices, trauma-informed schools, de-escalation tactics, anti-racist and implicit bias training, positive behavior supports, and culturally relevant and culturally sustaining education to support our students' needs and ensure that we are actually working toward healing versus harm and ending the disgraceful racial disparities in our schools. Thank you.
All right, next we have Sarah, a student. And Sarah, if you can hear us now, please unmute yourself, identify yourself for the record, and begin with your testimony. And we are timing, and you'll hear a phone ring, which is the end of the 2 minutes. But please proceed.
Welcome, Sarah. Hello, Chair Pryor and members of the Education Policy Committee. Hello.
We can hear you.
Okay. My name is Sarah, a member of the Minnesota Youth Council, a 36-member council of young people representing the 8 congressional districts in Minnesota. Empowered with the crucial task of amplifying the youth voices of youth across Minnesota, we approached our duties with full commitment and sincerity. I would like to begin by thanking you all for the opportunity to provide this testimony. My name is Sarah Manon, and I'm a senior at Hiawatha Collegiate High School in South Minneapolis. I'm also currently on the Minnesota City Council and serve as a co-chair for the Juvenile Justice Committee representing Congressional District 5. Speaking as a student of color that has grown up in a society where schools have become a pipeline for consideration of how this bill will affect students of color, the purpose of SROs, as stated in the bill, is to foster a positive school climate through relationship building and open communication. However, the absence of bias training and allowance of prone restraints in the bill could foster a negative school climate. To begin with, in Subdivision 4, there is no mention of bias training. While bias training is important for every job, it's crucial that SROs are required to be trained on both their conscious and unconscious biases, as students of color are continuously being pushed out of the classroom and into prison due to these biases, in order to ensure a bias training requirement. In addition to bias training, I also worry about the prevalence of prone restraint being used by SROs. I know firsthand the apprehension of young people of color have when it comes to law enforcement. By giving SROs the ability to use such force against students, it will only further the distrust between BIPOC youth and law enforcement. My peers are already afraid when it comes to law enforcement, and allowing prone restraints in schools will only further that fear. Lastly, there's a need to keep and expand the presence of youth voice in this legislation. This bill, as it stands, has the potential to not foster a positive school environment, and I truly believe that if we ensure more youth voices in this legislation, the model policy would be more effective. The bill imposes on student absence training. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir. I do apologize. I know that the audio in the room was a little broken. I think I got the gist of what you're saying, the content, and I think our bill author did too. And certainly, if there's any comments you want to follow up to the committee and to our bill author to make sure, and that was the 2 minutes, to make sure that your full statement is recorded and acknowledged. But, Sarah, thank you very much for being with us today. And we do appreciate the attempt for the remote testimony, and we'll take it into account. Our next up is Tiffany Forslin. And Tiffany, I believe, is a teacher. Please proceed. Introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, thank you. My name is Tiffany Flynn Forslin. I am a Roy Wilkins Community Fellow as well as a Katie Williams Care Fellow. I've been teaching and in the education system raising my adult children for over 30 years and 15 years professionally. I am currently a middle school science teacher at KIPP North Star Charter School, and I live in St. Paul. I've been an advocate and activist for children and education since 2011 as a transformational leader for Students First, governed under Michelle Rhee's leadership, and I was also the lead plaintiff in Forslin versus Minnesota. Now to the bill and the harm it will cause. I work for the children who need us the most to succeed in systems that are not created for them. This bill allowing for prone restraint and breath restrictive holds by SROs is one of them. I have lobbied against resource officers and the prison pipeline, which all affect student enrollment and success. BIPOC students ought to be able to come to school feeling safe and ready to learn. There is already trauma and fear due to the media and possible family trauma, in addition to social media posts showing police killings of people who possess melanin in their skin. Our school systems are equipped with only 4% teachers of color who also could be re-traumatized by these holds. To allow these dangerous and life-threatening holds will only cause physical harm to the students themselves and their peers who witness it. These air-restrictive holds do not protect our children, and this bill would only allow more leeway to use these dangerous holds against children of color predominantly. And thank you very much for allowing me this testimony.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony today, and thank you also for staying within the time limit. We do appreciate that in the committee. Glad to see you from KIPP Schools, I believe, right now. So we will move on. We will move on. I believe now we just have in-person testimony. So we will have moving up to our desk for testimony is Ms. Kulia Pringle. If you would please come forward.
Hi,
Ms. Pringle, if you would identify yourself for the record when you're settled in and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you, Chair. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I am the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union. We work with a lot of parents from a variety of demographics, but I want to speak here today to elevate the parent voices of the children who are disproportionately impacted by school discipline disparities, whose lives have been and will be impacted by policies and practice that limit their breath. I'm here to speak on behalf of the parents of the children who cross the intersection of race, disability, and gender. I'm here to speak on behalf of the many Black children, especially Black boys, who will fall prey to non-exclusionary disciplinary policies, practices, and actions. I'm here to speak on behalf of us in the Black community who is still suffering from trauma from watching trained officers sit on the back, legs, and neck of George Floyd, restricting his airway and denying him the rest of his life. In what world do we live in where we as a society say we shouldn't use prone restraints on adult prisoners, but we can use them we can use the same tactics on our children? In what world do we live in where we as a society think restricting the breath of children is appropriate in a school setting? The legislation passed last session was a no-brainer, and now we are playing politics with the lives of children. We believe the language is clear in the current bill. We also support parts of the bill that does offer SRO specialized training and some accountability for SROs in schools and the duties of SROs. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Pringle. Our next testifier is Aaron Sandsmark, and then after that it will be Matt Schaefer. So if you can be ready on deck as we proceed through the testimony.
Hello. Hello, I'm Erin Sandsmark, the Coalition Programs Manager for Solutions on Suspensions. SNS is a coalition of students, families, community members, and organizations committed to changing policies, practices, and mindsets in order to end racial disparities in discipline and foster positive school climates for all students. That is our mission, and that is why I'm here before you today. I believe that House File 3489 will undo important wins and protections that were gained in the 2023 legislative session. I am deeply disappointed that the bill before us today will grant the ability for SROs, security personnel, and other contracted officers to use air restrictive holds on students in schools. This is shameful, and as members of the Education Policy Committee, you should not take this lightly. I know that our community does not. This bill strips away the wins for students that we won last session to protect our children from dangerous restraints by adults. In this new bill, SROs, security personnel, and other contracted officers will be held to a lower standard of care and a lower standard of accountability than other adults in the school building. I've yet to hear a reason why we think that these types of air restrictive holds are necessary for children when other reasonable intervention by officers are allowed. Do you, as a committee, not think that these holds will cause the potential of serious harm or danger to our students? Why have the complaints by SROs and other security personnel been given more weight than the experiences of our children? Have enough young people been heard? I don't think so, or else we would not be here today. Furthermore, we know that these prone and air restrictive holds are more likely to be used on Black, Brown, Indigenous, and disabled youth. We as a state have witnessed firsthand what prone restraints can do and what state-sanctioned violence on Black bodies can do. George Floyd was murdered while in a prone restraint. We will take a step backwards as a state if we reopen the door to allow these air restrictive holds in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Schaefer. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Breyer, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Schaefer, Policy Director at Ed Allies. We're members of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 3489. Prone kills kids. You will see in your committee materials research from experts at Cornell University detailing how these dangerous positions and holds kill children. We are advocates for kids, and prone kills kids. This is not about whether SROs belong in schools. It's about whether we believe holds that kill children belong in school. Everyone has a child in their life. There are parents, uncles, and aunts, grandparents, coaches, and mentors in this room. Picture your child. When should they lose their right to bodily autonomy in our public schools? When should the math teacher be able to hold your child in a way that restricts or impairs their ability to breathe? When should the bus driver be able to put weight on your child's head while they are lying flat on the floor? When should a principal be able to put pressure on your child's chest? When should a security guard be able to straddle your child's torso? And when should a school resource officer be able to hold your child in a way that makes it impossible for your child to call out for help? What could possibly justify treating a child that way? My guess is if you were picturing your own child, you would want this to be done to them rarely, if ever, and it had better be because the situation was so dangerous that was the only way to intervene. That is the standard this legislature and governor signed into law last spring that we are here to defend. The chokehold ban in 609 is not equivalent to the prone restraint ban in 121A. 609.06 simply does not provide as much protection for children as what is currently in law in 121A. The clarity everyone is seeking would mean explicitly detailing when SROs can and cannot put children into dangerous holds, not just in a model policy, but in statute. We do support the concept of the model policy. We can and should pass pages 3 through 8 of this bill without needing to pass pages 1 and 2. If nothing about this bill changes, there will be a 2-year gap between passage and the adoption of model policy. What will we tell our children in the meantime? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to call up the next two testifiers. First, Joyner Emmerich, and then after that, Roger Arneson, if you can be on deck. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Joyner Emmerich. I am a school board director at large in the city of Minneapolis. I am also a disability self-advocate and the parent of two disabled children, one who has nonverbal autism and who is placed in the most restrictive education setting that we have in the state of Minnesota, which means that he is incredibly vulnerable to the use of restrictive procedures, and why I am so incredibly thankful that in 2015 we banned the use of prone restraint on students with disabilities in the state of Minnesota. We have determined that special education staff and teachers, will be able to know the difference between allowed reasonable use of force and illegal prone restraint. We also expect correctional officers working in prisons to know the difference between allowed reasonable use of force and illegal prone restraint. We expect that people providing intensive licensed services to adults with disabilities are able to know the difference between allowed reasonable use of force and illegal prone restraint. We expect them to know and act according to the law because people's lives are at stake. Given the existing expectations at the statutory level in Minnesota for professionals working with comparable populations doing similar work, it seems exceedingly reasonable that law enforcement officers working with students inside schools will be held to the same standards. All these professionals can and should be held accountable to know the difference between allowable use of force and potentially fatal restraint types and act accordingly in their service roles. Use of prone restraints is particularly dangerous for already marginalized groups, occurring with higher frequency and resulting in more dangerous outcomes. I am going to ask very clearly that our Minnesota legislature does not pass another law that gives passive permission for the state to kill Black and Indigenous children. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Roger Arneson next, and after that will be Terrence Morrow, if you would be on deck as our next testifier.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members. I'm Roger Arneson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations in Minnesota. It's good to be back here with the legislative session. Just as a reminder, that's 2,200 school principals throughout the state of Minnesota. We're pleased to be here tonight and to offer our support for House File 3489. On the front end, I want to say that Representative Frazier has shown significant leadership. This is not an easy bill to carry forward. He held multiple meetings along with yourself, Madam Chair, and with the department and other folks. We were very pleased to be part of those meetings. There were changes that we had requested in here. We've got some of them. We didn't get all of them. I think he indicated during those discussions that, frankly, that's a good test of bills when everyone doesn't get everything that they want. There's a significant change relative to schools here where we delete the word imminent in the reasonable force standard. That's going to offer some significant clarity for school principals and teachers as we deal with students and not have to try to assess the subjective standard of what's imminent, how imminent was it, et cetera. We appreciate that change very much. This bill has an intersection with the criminal code as well as our education code. And it makes it very complicated sometimes, and the bill actually resolves some of the differences for us in that education piece. It's going to make it easier for us to implement this. I just want to close with both commissioners that were here when this started out. I don't think anyone has any doubt that the safety of students in our schools is absolutely essential. We have 880,000 public school students. We expect to get them home safe every day. We think this bill, on balance, actually moves towards that. We think that's going to make kids safer, and that's why school principals think this is a good idea, that school districts now will have the options. Those districts that want to can use school liaison officers, and that we'll have a policy as this gets developed in the next couple of years to make all of that work. So we thank you, Madam Chair, and we thank Representative Frazier for bringing this bill forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. After this, Valerie Doslin will be on deck. Thank you for being with us. Please identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pryor and committee members. I am Terry Morrow. I'm the Minnesota School Boards Association's Director of Legal and Policy Services. I, too, wish to thank Representative Frazier and Senator Westland for their role in leading timely, productive, and positive conversations about this bill. It truly was a collaborative engagement with the education organizations, and we greatly appreciate it. We are thankful that the concerns we raised concerning school employees, which were incorporated within the original bill, were able to be addressed. While this bill is often called the SRO bill, today I am focused simply on school employee-related provisions. As Chair Pryor noted, there were inconsistencies between the education code and the criminal code that arose that would directly affect school employees' responsibilities that this bill, I believe, does a nice job of resolving. MSBA is here to raise just one point. To be crystal clear, school employees should not use prohibited prone restraints or any holds that might restrict a student's breathing or communication of distress, as described in Minnesota Statutes 121A.58 and in Section 3 of this bill, to protect school property. But in this bill, we want to confirm that school employees will be able to physically intervene reasonably, responsibly, and rarely to protect school property. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Doslin, and after that, Jessica Webster, if you can be on deck, please. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, representing school superintendents and other administrators throughout the state. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House Pile 3489. I want to thank Representative Frazier for inviting MASA to participate in conversations as he worked to seek clarifications on the 2023 language. School superintendents take very seriously the safety and security of our students, teachers, and staff. They understand the need to employ a variety of measures to ensure a safe learning environment, which may include employing school resource officers. However, our school superintendents and school boards need the ability to determine at the local level what measures staff can use to best address the district's or school's safety needs. We believe House File 3489 addresses the issue, the 2023 language raised, and allows school districts to work with their local law enforcement agencies on whether to employ school resource officers in their schools. I'd also like to just reiterate, we also seek the clarity that Mr. Morrow talked about regarding the use of tools that school districts have available should an incident involve the destruction of property. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Ms. Webster, and then we do have some students that are going to be testifying, and I'll wait, and we'll go into that section in a moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, also representing the Disability Law Center. We are strongly opposed to House File 3489 as written. We believe that the spirit and intent of last year's legislation was to ban prone restraint and breath-impacting holds on children in our schools, also to ban holds that restrict or impair a child's ability to communicate distress. Legal Aid absolutely supports that intention and what passed because Legal Aid and the Disability Law Center have experience representing children who have been hurt in prone restraint and prone holds. We advocated strongly for the ban that passed for children in 2015 for children with disabilities. So now I'll say that Legal Aid also acknowledges that the Attorney General issued two opinions on this issue, and the county attorney for the largest county in the state issued a slightly different opinion from Attorney General Ellison. As such, we support noting and clarifying that confusion. Fine, clarify it. But why would we repeal the ban on prone and the ban on breath-impacting holds? To be very, very clear, with respect, Representative Frazier, 60906 does not ban prone restraint on children in schools. I feel like advocates are being told we don't understand. We don't get it. We don't understand the law. This bill does not ban prone, and 60906 does not ban prone. And I know that because as advocates, we were asked to sit down with the superintendent of the BCA last month to be schooled on how these statutes work. He said prone is very safe. We disagree. We vehemently disagree, and we oppose this legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. So I have on my list Simon, Dallas, Mira, Ayala, and Gabrielle. And perhaps if we can, Simon and Dallas, if you can move to the front for your testimony and to know the others, we welcome you forward too. Actually, you can come forward. But if you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi there. My name is Dallas. I am a junior in high school, Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and I'm a community activist. Thank you for the opportunity to strongly oppose House File 3489. I'm here today to advocate. I'm here today to advocate for the systematically suppressed voices of us, the youth. In a place where we are supposed to learn, grow, and thrive, several of my peers must worry about their safety in school. Prone restraints threaten the lives of our youth, as we have seen the effects it has on people mentally, physically, and emotionally. Several school-based police officers and resource officers have stated concerns that this affects their job by restricting what they can do. While I'm thankful for the SROs who build relationships and be positive advocates, being able to put a kid in a headlock or a chokehold or kneel on their neck is nowhere near necessary in our schools. Prone restraints are most definitely not a necessity in schools, but you know what is? Therapists, psychologists, and nurses. Only one-third of schools have nurses in this state. And counselors, the American Counselor Association recommendation, they suggest one counselor to 250 students. In Minnesota, it's one counselor to 650. All of these positions are severely undermet and are more necessary than being able to put a child in a chokehold. Please listen to those who will be affected by this the most, the students, as we are here today. And please listen and respect us as this affects us, not adults. Thank you.
Thank you. Mira?
Hi.
Thank you for joining us today. Please introduce yourself and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. My name is Mira, and I'm a member of the Youth Network at the Legal Rights Center and a high school student in the St. Paul Public Schools District. I'm here today on behalf of the students who do not have the opportunity to use their voice. Countless of my peers, many of whom are Black, Brown, Indigenous, or disabled, have lasting trauma from being held face down by an adult using prone restraint in an already stressful situation. Even more frightening is the thought that the adults entrusted with the responsibility of our education will be willing to accommodate the wants of officers over the needs of students. It is our right to be safe in school, and the implementation of this bill would quite literally block that right. As we try together on Minnesota's path to a safer education system, I urge everyone to look deeper into this bill and the various missteps that would be taken if implemented. Section 9, Subdivision 2 names relationship building and open communication an official duty of school resource officers. However, this is a moot point, seeing as the requirement for open communication is no longer truly there after striking language that forbids SROs from carrying out holding that restricts a pupil's ability to communicate distress and prone restraints in Section 2. In addition, Section 9 raises cause for concern. Subdivision 3 exempts SROs from duties described in Subdivision 2, Clause 4 and 5 during their grace period if they are unable to complete training before commencing their work in schools, but they are still required to carry out the duty of protecting students, staff, and visitors to the school grounds from criminal activity. Many kids as young as middle schoolers, 14 years old, are legally capable of committing a crime, and to my understanding, this bill would legally permit SROs to use these life-threatening holds on kids before being adequately trained in during this grace period. I see and experience the benefits of positive relationships between school personnel and students every day, and I believe if SROs are truly fit to go about their duties and committed to making school a safe place, the use of prone restraint is always uncalled for and should remain not allowed. I cannot express to you the extent that of hurt that would be felt by the countless students negatively affected by House File 3489 as written. But what I can do is respectfully reiterate what is already common sense, that in no world is holding a child face down an effective way to go about our education. Please listen to the voices of Minnesota's youth as you go about this legislative session, because our future and our safety are in your hands. Thank you.
Leah? Thank you for joining us. Please identify yourself and begin with your testimony.
Hello. My name is Gabriel. I'm a legal educator with the Youth Network at the Legal Rights Center. I'm here today to share my experience with prone restraints. I was only a fifth grader weighing less than 100 pounds when a peace officer held me down with his knees on my upper back. My chest was compressed to the ground, making it harder for me to breathe and take in air. As spectators were shook as they were told not to interfere with, quote, police duties. Although I'll never forget, I'm just glad I'm here today, knowing that some didn't make it. Adults, youth should not have to fear for their lives when dealing with law enforcement. Thank y'all. And yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And I believe that some of the two of the students that did sign up were not able to be with us today. So at that point, we have now concluded with our public testimony. If others have information they'd like to share with the committee, that we can still accept written testimony after this time, and I will forward it on to members. All right. At this point, I think we will take up the DE3 amendment and move that before us. Representative Bakeberg, I believe that's your amendment. Would you like to move it?
Yes, I would like to move it.
All right. So the DE3 amendment is before us. Would you please explain your amendment?
You bet. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think before I jump in and explain the amendment, I'd like to thank the testifiers for testifying on this topic. And I think all of us in the room, I'd also like to thank Representative Frazier for his work as well. But all of us in the room, we have a common goal of working with kids and making sure kids are safe. So I think we just have to start out from that foundation that we want kids to be safe wherever they're at. I've been in my role as a school principal long enough to have made decisions that I thought were the right decision. And then now, years later, I'm like, oh, that was a mistake. And I should have done it this way, or should have tweaked it that way. So the DE amendment builds upon the work that was done in House File 3489. Simply put, the DE works within the framework and helps to resolve the issue that's been created. It begins with acknowledging the mistake of passing policies, pushing peace officers out of school districts that are choosing at the local level to have police officers there. but it makes improvements on the bill by incorporating changes from the law enforcement community and school districts, the actual boots on the ground doing the important work in our school. So first, as in House File 3489, the DE repeals the limitation of school SROs to use prone restraints and other restrictive holds in schools. Second, as in 3489, this DE removes the carve-out for SRO and peace officers from the rules of reasonable force within the education code. Third, as in 3489, the DE does revise the use of force authorization in 609, the criminal code, but with the important caveat that some force may still be used when necessary to protect property. The other main differences with the DE include the training requirement and the model policy. It adds $250,000 to fiscal year 25 to reimburse for the training costs of SROs. Training is critical. Every police officer that I've talked to has said that the training component is really critical. The training requirement is simplified using two established SRO training courses and the 13 learning objectives set out for future training. Plus, the training would fall under the Department of Public Safety School Safety Center rather than the Post Board. The School Safety Center is already mandated and equipped for school safety issues, and the funding in the bill and this amendment are already directed at the center. Finally, the DE removes the model policy. This is unnecessary. The bill and the DE already prescribe the duties of the SRO to be covered in the contractual agreements between the local district and the local agency. The model policy would simply be another restriction on law enforcement agencies to enter into agreements with schools to help with the safety and security. Again, the concern is about getting back so we're all on the same page with this. The bottom line is you can either trust school districts and law enforcement to work toward safe schools for students or see law enforcement as part of the problem. In my opinion, law enforcement and local school districts know their community best and should be part of the solution. As we talked about earlier, we have much work to do to address school safety, and this DE is just the start of the conversation to ensure that our students are safe in school. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. I'll turn first to Representative Frazier for a discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for the DE. You know, I just this afternoon we had this conversation on the floor, and members on the other side of the aisle talked about the goal or the need to build a comprehensive safety program for our schools. The problem with this DE amendment is that it takes that ability away. The DE amendment, I mean, the current draft proposal of this bill requires that certain stakeholders are engaged as they draft this model policy. If we were to accept this DE amendment, we eliminate that process. We've heard multiple people testify about wanting their voices heard. What we're saying, if we take this DE amendment, is that we don't care about those voices, and those voices will not be heard. I'm not saying you personally don't care about those voices because you work in a school, but that is the message that we'd be relaying if we take this opportunity away. I do believe in the importance of the stakeholders. That's why we've been engaging so many stakeholders over the months. It was loud and clear to us that these folks want to continue to be engaged in the process as we work towards a model policy. And this model policy is important. It will create a comprehensive, uniform policy across the state that does not exist now. In fact, in some districts, we have contracts for SRO programs. In some districts, we have a word. We don't have any contracts for SRO programs. What we want to provide here is transparency, clarity, and a framework for accountability if necessary. That is the most important thing here. And we should always do that with the framework and the lens that we're doing it for our kids. And I think this proposal as it is does that. And so I'm going to ask members to reject the DE amendment because I think it takes away from the very thing that we're trying to do here.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Further discussion?
Madam Chair,
DE 3 amendment.
Yeah,
Representative Baker.
I want to make sure that I ask for a roll call. So just make sure that I forgot to mention that earlier. Okay. So get
right.
That in there.
There is a roll call on the DE 3 amendment. Further discussion? Okay. We will proceed with the roll call on the DE 3 amendment. And I will introduce, this is Isabel Anderson, our committee's legislative assistant, who at this point in time does have some limitations on her voice. So we will listen carefully, and she will call our names. And the microphone will be, I think, of use.
Chair Pryor.
Chair Pryor votes no.
Vice Chair Hill.
No.
Lead Bennett.
Yes.
Representative Bateberg.
Yes.
Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Vice.
No.
Representative Frazier.
No.
Representative Keeler.
No.
Representative Knudsen.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
Representative Lee votes no.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Representative Joachim.
No.
There are 5 ayes and 8 nays, and with that, the motion does not prevail.
Thank you. Thank you, members. All right, with that, I guess I need to do this. Okay. All right, I will repeat what Ms. Anderson just said. With the vote of 8-3, what was it? 5 ayes, ayes, and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. All right. Thank you, members, as I remember how to be chair. All right. We will move on to discussion of 3489. And I see, first of all, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate, Representative Frazier, your desire to have more clarity in what's happening in our schools, what's happening with these various programs. And I have received a list of comments, questions, and I'm just going to pick a few of them because I think they're obvious and fairly easily corrected in terms of clarity. And so I would like to bring them up. First of all, the definition of the school includes elementary school, middle school, and secondary school. But in line 5, 1-1 to 14, a peace officer working in elementary and secondary schools are mentioned. It doesn't mention middle school, and we have SROs in middle schools. So I'm suggesting that we clarify by adding middle school to elementary and secondary. Another states that SROs should coordinate criminal investigations between law enforcement and school officials in line 5.19. This line suggests that SROs are not law enforcement, but we need to avoid further confusion in this matter because SROs are fully licensed peace officers in the state of Minnesota. Also, line 7.5 and 7.10 through 16, the reference to the board is unclear. Does this reference the model policy board, the post board, or the school board? I think we need clarification there as well. So those are just a few instances that I think you should be able to act on that add to some clarity.
If I may, I'm going to call on Representative Joachim, Chair Joachim, for some clarification on the points that you just raised. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Erdahl may have an old version of the bill that he was referencing. Maybe we could provide some clarification.
And possibly that is the issue, and we will be sure and follow up and make sure that that does answer your questions.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, we're all about clarity here today. And this is actually something that I received from my sheriff. And so if he's a little step behind, that's okay. But whatever, we need to be clear as to what we're doing. You know, while I have this, could I ask a question of Commissioner Jacobson?
Yes. Commissioner Jacobson, would you please return to the testifier stand? And thank you for staying and being available for questions. And Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, maybe you're not the person to ask. I'm not sure. I don't know if anyone knows the answer to this. But could you tell me, and I think someone said that in 2015, after that date, prone restraints were prohibited. Is that the year?
Commissioner,
do you know when that is?
Thank you for that question. The latest change in prone restraints were chokeholds were prohibited, I believe, was in a more recent year than that, perhaps 2022. I can get that exact date for you, but the 60906 statute that we've talked about that prohibits chokeholds came out through a group that came together post George Floyd to change that that statute.
Madam Chair, thank you, Commissioner Jacobson. Now, so that's relatively recent that the prone restraints have been restricted. Now, I taught for 34 years, and never recall one instance of prone restraints in my school. Now that. Actually, it was quite a while ago, so things could have changed. But are there? I mean, do we keep records as to how many prone restraints happen? What is the severity of injuries to students? Is there anything like that?
Commissioner Jacobson,
thank you again for the question. Let me just. Double down on Representative Baker's comment, reference those who came here to testify today. I think that listening to what they've had to say, the discussions that have been brought forth, the concerns that have been brought forward by our partners in the community certainly resonate always as we, again, all have the common goal of safe schools. And for anyone that's been harmed by a school resource officer inappropriately by a school resource officer, any student out there, my apologies. We do not expect that from our school resource officers. But police officers in general, my experience, are highly valuable. They're professional. It's a noble profession. And those that become school resource officers have it in their heart to do this work. And they do it as part of a team of educators, health professionals, counselors within a school setting. To the issue regarding the number of use of force incidents or prone restraints or chokeholds that have been used in schools, one of the things that I think that I appreciate in Representative Frazier's approach to this bill is to make sure that in the future there will be data, if this bill passes, there will be data collected on the number of use of force incidents by the Minnesota Department of Education. So we will have that answer. Right now, we do not. We have no data.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Commissioner Jackson. Madam Chair, I think the question Representative Erdahl is asking would be best answered by the Department of Education, because I think what you're referring to when they said the ban of prone restraints, and this was the ban on prone restraints back in 2015 in regards to students that are receiving special education services, and that would be a question for Department of Education if you wanted some clarity on that.
All right. Representative Erdahl, would you like?
Madam Chair, yes. You know, I'm all about clarity today here.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that.
You know, for the past and the future. And I do appreciate the comments being made by people. But if we can get some more clarity, I think it'd be important. So if someone from the Department of Education would care to address that.
All right. Mr. Uni, if you would please join us, identify yourself for the record, and perhaps we can address Representative Erdahl's question.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, so, unfortunately, up to this point, up until last year, we did not collect data specifically on these instances, but that's why we came last year in our budget bill to collect data on the use of reasonable force in all instances for between adults on students. And our team is busy putting those systems up and putting information out to be able to collect that data. I think we'll have that after instances next year. We're building out the systems right now. So we should have that data in future years.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. I'm done.
Thank you. Representative Joachim? No? I'm sorry. Sorry. All right. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you prefer, I have a question and then just some final comments. Would you prefer me to wait until the end and do it?
Well, Representative Bakeberg, did you have a question that you would like addressed? We mentioned that before.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so maybe your question now, and then we'll turn to you for final comments after Representative Bakeberg.
Okay, thank you so much. So my question is, I believe it would be for Representative Frazier, but if somebody else can answer it better, let me know. We're about clarity, right, Representative Erdahl? So last session, we were never told why the changes made in 2023 were needed. We never had hearings on this particular bill. I'm not sure where the original provision came from. I know it ended up in the final huge omnibus bill. So I guess that's my question is, where is the evidence that these changes were needed that were made last year? So that's a little different than your bill. Because it seems like this is a solution looking for a problem that in my mind wasn't there. And unfortunately, it's created an image of teachers and school resource officers who are intentionally choking and physically harming children. And that is not true. And I believe you know that as well. So I guess my question is, why was this change made last year? Where's the evidence that we have a lot of issues in our schools with teachers or SRO officers choking or physically harming children?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bennett, thank you for the question. I was not in those conversations last year when things were worked out and the ultimate bill was put in place that ultimately was passed by legislation, went through the committee process, and then was signed by the governor. I was not there. But what I can tell you is that because we don't have the data, to say that these things don't happen would be, I think, an inaccurate statement, and it would be a misrepresentation because we don't have the data to prove that. But what I can tell you now going forward is that we will collect that data, and then we could actually honestly and thoughtfully and informed answer that question, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Bennett, I will also add to that answer that the different provisions that have caused the questioning and the need for clarification came from separate bills. One was the policy bill that I was the author of, that was heard in committee and then passed on. As I noted in my introduction, it wasn't – this particular provision did not have a lot of discussion so that we – it was heard in committee. I mean, it was introduced. It was heard in committee. It was forwarded on to Education Finance. At that point, another provision was added, which is the data collection part, because there needed to be funding to collect this data to make sure that this additional need was funded in our schools. And I think I can also reiterate what we've heard. We hear a lot about incidences that people are bringing forward. We've not always listened, not always heard, not always taken action. The data collection of saying the reporting of it means that we will have that information going forward. But of course, the intent of the bill that we passed last year, the intent of the bill that we passed that we're hearing this year, is not to just collect data on these incidences, but to make sure these incidences of excessive force never happen in our schools. And so that's maybe a further clarification of the question that you're asking and what we're engaged with today. So follow up on that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a short comment concerning the question. And I'd have to say I think collecting data and this type of thing is important. I have no issues with that. Mm-hmm. I guess it's the broader picture that comes to my mind is something I constantly kind of harangue about is these huge omnibus bills, because this provision was in a huge bill. It didn't get the light of day that it needed to get for one reason or another. I mean, it's as much our issue as whoever, because mm-hmm. you don't notice everything. And this should have been a separate bill that we heard so that we could all have clarity on why it's needed and the parts that should be in it and really get it fleshed out, and it didn't happen. And I'm not blaming one side or the other, because both sides do these big omnibus bills, but we have to stop it, and important bills like this should be heard as individual bills. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think we do agree with you. This is an important issue, and that we welcome the bill hearing today and believe that this is a step forward. So thank you for your comments, Representative Bennett. Representative, I'm going to go to Representative Bakeford. You did have a question, and then we do have some another Representative Joachim will follow you.
Sounds good. My question is for Commissioner Jacobson. Then I just have one other question after that.
Commissioner Jacobson, we're just so happy that you're here with us today that we're going to keep calling you back to hear more.
Happy to be of service, Chair Pryor.
So thank you for your testimony and for the work that you do. I just a very, very simple question. So the DE amendment that we just discussed, in the form that the DE is, would you support that DE amendment in the language where it's at?
Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pryor. I would have to spend some more time reviewing that before I could give you an answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And a further question or comment?
I just have a comment question. We'll see here. So, Representative Frazier, I want to
comment in the form of a question. That is allowed.
Something like that, yeah. So Representative Frazier, you had indicated that the model policy will be written, and I actually really appreciated what you said on the floor this morning about getting people in the room to actually talk, because I think so often we run to our extremes, and people just throw pot shots at each other and don't have a great conversation. So I would be willing to chat with you anytime. So we'll start out with that. But you had said on the floor that you want to get people together. But I think the struggle and why in the DE we didn't want that model policy in there is because there's nothing requiring the post board to actually to meet with stakeholders. The bill only requires the post board to develop the model policy after consulting, I believe is the word in there, with a list of people. So do you have a plan on how that's going to be rolled out, a schedule, something along those lines, on how that's going to look in that meeting structure?
Madam Chair, I don't, because I'm not the post board, but Mr. Missel was still here, so if you'd like to come down.
Thank you. Thank you for returning, and please identify yourself.
Certainly. Again, Eric Missel, the chair, executive director. It's easy to call people chair, I guess. I'm not the chair. Executive director of the post board.
And so the question is, if you heard it in the discussion, if you could please edify us.
So to the to that language. That is, as I mentioned earlier, pretty common for us. And so what that means to us and what the marching orders have been from the board to me, how we've handled in the past, means that we'll actually, we will be meeting with these groups. So what we tend to do is end up being the facilitator. We schedule the meetings, bring the groups together in whatever format that is, do the work on the policy, come to consensus, and then submit it to the full board for approval and ultimately implementation. Timeline is always TBD, depends on the topic, but certainly we can work with the timeline that was put in the bill.
Thank you. Thank you. And Representative Erdl.
Thank you. Just a real quick question. Will the Minnesota School Resource Officers Association be included in the discussion? There are various groups listed here, and I don't see the Resource Officers Association included. Will they be part of this discussion?
I'm going to turn to Representative Frazier for the question.
Yes.
So there is an opportunity to, you know, be able to fine-tune and include this, and I think, is that posted at this point?
It should be, yes.
Yes. So there is an amendment that has been posted now in public for the Public Safety Committee, and that group is now included.
Why doesn't people just tell me all these things before I...
Representative Bakeberg, did you have a follow-up question or comment?
I did. Representative Erdahl was excited. So thank you for your clarification about that process, what that will look like. I think, just to be very frank, there's significant concern around the model policy that once that process is done, we will be back in the same exact situation after December of 25. And what I was told by some of my constituents, they said, you know, Ben, that's very interesting. That just gets that kicks the can down the road long enough to get us past the election. That seems very convenient. So I'm just throwing that out there, that is a concern about what that will look like. The last thing I'll say is, just because something is a good idea in one place, like we have a lot of great things happening in the school district that I serve, it may not work in Moorhead. And we should not be making these blanket statewide decisions. And we need to trust our local officials to make the decisions that work best for them. And I would echo Representative Bennett's comments that some of the rhetoric around this is very damaging to educators, very harmful, very hurtful to educators, because those of us that serve kids, we don't do it to hurt kids. We do it because we want to love and serve the community that we're in. So some of the language, some of the rhetoric, in my opinion, is offensive. So I'll leave it at that.
Representative Bakeberg, is there something in the bill that you're alluding to in terms of rhetoric? And I feel, or that something that we have said as a committee or Representative Frazier has said? That
some of the way that educators have been talked about, and I'm just echoing what Lee Bennett just, what she mentioned, and then the conversation in totality around this issue has been hurtful to colleagues that I work with. So.
Okay, and I'm taking from your answer, though, that that certainly Representative Frazier, this committee process, that has been respectful to educators as well as other stakeholders, and just appreciate that clarification. And
may I, Madam Chair?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Baker, what I'll say to that is that I work with a lot of educators, a lot, a whole bunch around the state. And what I did not hear when this law went into effect, and it, we'll go back to 2015 when they put the ban in place for an actual ban in place for students are receiving this education services, is that educators responded that makes sense. We don't want to hurt our kids. We don't want to put them in a position that's going to be harmful. We'll get trained up. We'll figure it out. That is the same message that I'm hearing today.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier. I worked as an Indian education liaison for 12 years. I've talked about this in a lot of spaces. And it was my job in that time to be a voice for our kids and our students who are often overlooked and invisible. When it comes to the data piece, it's kind of known that we collect data on the things that matter, and it's really disappointing that as an entire police force, you're telling me that we don't have any data on prone restraints or where they have been held ever. So, like, we can't even, like, that's really disturbing to me. And I'm going to work really hard at keeping my emotions together because I send kids to school every day that this is a risk. My number one job in this world is to be a mom, and my other job is to be a liaison and a voice for the underserved, which is our Black, Brown, and Indigenous children. It's interesting that we come to these tables and we often talk about protecting the police or what administrators want or what teachers want. And at the end of the day, our kids deserve a place. Now, mind you, it's by law required that kids have to go to school and then we're over-policing certain populations. Moorhead has SROs. And I can tell you that when this happened in my district, the only people that reached out to me, my superintendent didn't, teachers didn't, Chair Pryor came and spent an entire day in my district talking to administrators, teachers, and students. And this issue never came up. 60 of my students reached out to me and said it is like a prison-style policing in my school. And so I'm going to continue to stand up for the kids. I'm going to continue to stand up for our kids with disabilities, with students who have mental health concerns, that this creates massive anxiety. And, you know, a lot of people ask us, what was your favorite teacher, your favorite moment in school? And I can tell you my experience, I had none. Because it was terrifying. It was either you go to school or your parents are going to go to prison or jail, right? Because that's how truancy works. Or we have to walk around and be over-policed. And I've seen it happen in my district over and over. So I don't need the data to tell me that this is happening. I believe our students and I believe our teachers and I believe our parents when they come to us and say they've seen this happen in our schools. I think this bill has still a lot of work to do. And I've been very frank and honest with Representative Frazier about that. So I want to, one, say thank you to the students that took the time to come here and share your power and continue to do that, please. But I do have a question, and it's regarding how our police show up in schools. So if we're going to continue to have SROs in our schools, in my district, it's really interesting how this plays out. In our middle school and in our high school, they come in full uniform. And we built a new school. Chair Pryor saw it. It's beautiful. So it stacks up three levels. And the police stand up on the top looking down at the kids. And I've gotten many pictures of this. It's a brand new school, just opened after Christmas, so we're not even a month in. And it's amazing how many of my students feel unsafe in that type of setting. Now, you go to my alternative school, which I don't believe this because I love our alternative students, but society will tell you maybe these are the kids who are most harmful or most dangerous, right? That SRO wears a polo. And he's very relational. He's one of the nicest guys, SRO Ochoa, right? And I respect that. So my question is there's no consideration in here in how these peace officers show up in our schools because we talked a lot about positive relationship, constructive relationships. But I can tell you in communities where policing has not been positive, there is a power dynamic when you show up in full uniform. So Representative Frazier, can you talk to me a little bit about what the potentials are that at least if we're going to do this, we can address maybe a softer approach in how they show up in uniform, willing to actually build those relationships versus creating a power dynamic amongst our peace officers and our students?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Yeah, that is not covered in the bill explicitly to address the uniform or wear of the SROs if a district has an SRO program. But at the local level, they're more than welcome to have that, like your school district did. Any district could say, we'd like to have a softer approach. We'd like you to blend in and not to have on a badge and a uniform. And you could do it that way to help foster and build relationships. That's absolutely allowable.
Follow-up, Representative Keeler?
I mean, I don't think it's whether it's allowable or not. I think at some point the state needs to put parameters on what our children are asking for. And I hear it all the time. Superintendents, principals, police officers, teachers, we have to protect them. Again, I'm going to say I feel like we have to do better to stand up for the voice of our children and the parents who have been through horrific situations. And, you know, you're really privileged if you don't think that this is happening in our schools, because I can tell you it has. And if you've not sat with parents or kids or families that have gone through this in our school settings, it's horrific. And I'm sorry for any families and kids out there who have either experienced this or lost children due to situations like this. This is a very hard conversation, and I just think we need to do better for our future generations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. I'm going to turn to Representative Joachim, and then I believe that we'll be concluding discussion, and Representative Bennett will give you the last word. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. One thing I've learned in the last few years, you should never go after Representative Keeler. But I just want to thank all the testifiers that came to speak today. It's not our first conversation together, and I want to thank you so much for all the partnership over the years around non-exclusionary discipline and making sure that we have psychologists and counselors and social workers in our schools. You really have been a partner in that, and that is so very important to all of us at this table. And we were very blessed last year to have a budget to be able to do a lot of the work, but we still have work to do. And the conversation today just shows us how much work we still need to do. It's very important to me to have every adult that's in our schools be trained to work with our kids. I work as a paraprofessional during the interim, mostly with kiddos with special needs. This year I tried my hand at short call sub, and I'm telling you, there is a skill set I don't have in doing managing behavior and educating students, so I'm probably going back to be a para next year, so thank you to all those teachers out there who seem to be able to do this seamlessly. I guess I can't stumble through a lesson plan like some people think you can. It means a lot to me, especially with what Representative Keeler just said. Our kids are required to be in our schools by law. It should be a safe learning environment for everybody, those who work there, those who are trying to learn there. It also should be a safe learning environment emotionally as well as academically, but also to the aspect that kids should be able to make mistakes in a safe learning environment and not have them affect the rest of their lives. And that is what we're trying to get to with this bill, to make sure that everybody understands what's going on. We learned after we passed it that the underlying statutes were so conflicting that there was no easy answer to clarify it. So Representative Frazier took this upon himself with Chair Pryor and Chair Moeller and quite a few others to really work hard and dig deep into how to move this forward to make it the most successful as possible is the start of this conversation. And I want to thank the commissioners from DPS and MDE for being a part of that conversation to make sure that we understood how those statutes all work together. I think the model policy is probably one of the most important pieces in this bill, and that's to make sure that we do have a statewide baseline on how we treat our kids. So I know there's that hopeful for that local control, and I get that. I was on a school city council, but it should be pretty easy to find that state line baseline of how we treat our children when they're in our custody in our schools. Because they have no choice but to be there. They have no choice what to interact with the people that are in their environment. So the model policy is so, so very important for that. And I do trust the post board, the folks that work in law enforcement, and the work they're going to do with our stakeholders to make sure that that looks right. And if it doesn't look right, we can keep working at it. I also think it's very important that we're removing the duty for SROs to facilitate how a child behaves in school, if they get to class, if they're paying attention to a teacher. That is a teacher and administrative responsibility. That is a school employees' responsibility, which, by the way, also includes security officers because they're school employees. They're not SROs, so they fall under an even stricter protocol than the SROs. And that's where you have that interaction that sometimes can go wrong is when a school resource officer is asked by a district to, that kid's not going to class. Can you make him go? we remove that from here. And that's why having that contract and that model policy is so very important. Because that is an administrator, a teacher, school employee's responsibility. And I want to thank folks that talked about teachers and where their hearts lie. I'm married to a teacher. I have a son who's a teacher. I have four sister-in-laws who are teachers. I work in the schools, too, and I think they're part of the reason why our schools are successful, and they care a lot about our kids, and I think everybody does. And I appreciate what you said, Representative Vakeberg, about the rhetoric around this bill. What I was worried about with rhetoric is the rhetoric that I've heard from folks in the public who criminalize our children when they talk about this bill. Because that's not okay. That's just not okay. So I think together we can all move forward, make this bill a little bit better as it goes through public safety, continue the conversation, and make sure the right people are at the table when we're making the model policy and making these decisions. And I just want to thank the authors for working so hard on this. And on a lighter note, some of us were joking around about how much time we've spent thinking and talking about SROs since August, when all of a sudden it became a problem right before school started. Talk about political. That was a little odd. But we joked around about that because I know, you know, some folks here have billable hours that if they could bill a dollar for every minute we talked about this, I think between Mueller and Representative Frazier and Chair Pryor and myself and a few others, we probably could have put about 4% on the formula ourselves already. So I just want to thank everybody that's been working hard, and let's keep the conversation up because this is just the start of the conversation, and I know we can make it better for our kids going forward. Thank you for not long rambling conversation, and I appreciate it.
Right, we're warming up, ready for our new session, and they didn't give us a time limit, so here we go. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, everybody, for the good discussion. And, you know, the bottom line of this in my mind is we're here right now because the legislature broke this last year, and now we need to fix it. And if this was about collecting data, and I think that's hugely important to know what's going on in our schools, we should have passed that part last year. That we wouldn't be sitting here if that bill was about collecting data, because we all agree with that. We need to know if things like that are happening in our schools and have real data so we can make good decisions as a legislature. If this was about strengthening the training and tightening up the training, we should have had that last year, and we wouldn't be sitting here today, but we are sitting here today because SROs were basically forced out of schools because of the legislation we passed last year. 94% of students want SROs in schools. We are listening to students. We should listen to all parts of what students say, and this is part of it. So I am happy, Representative Frazier, thank you so much for taking this on. I know it wasn't your bill last year, and you're doing wonderfully taking it on. I think the rollbacks in it are good. I do have concerns about parts of this fix still. But it saddens me that we're basically assuming that teachers and law enforcement in our schools are choking our children and harming them physically. And we should never assume that. Neither should we assume the opposite. You know, we have to be very careful what we do as a legislature. So I appreciate all the work on this. I'm saddened that we have to be here right now today making this fix that we shouldn't have to make. But right now we've tied the hands of schools. I could tell you stories that I've heard about, and I know, I personally know administrators and teachers who are on crutches right now because of trying to adequately restrain an out-of-control student. And it's never easy to restrain a kid, and it's a sad thing when you have to. I was a teacher for many years, and it was a very rare thing. And our school staff are trained very well in this. We can do better, obviously. I won't tell all the specific stories because of time, Madam Chair, but I just it concerns me that our SROs are out of school, so let's get them back in. Let's continue to work on this so our staff also have reasonable ways to restrain students, because there are times that you have to do it. And it's sad when we do. We want to do it safely. We want everybody safe in our schools, students, teachers, administrators, parents, whoever is in our school should be safe when they're in there. So I know we all agree on that, so that's a good thing. So, again, Representative Frazier, thank you. I would ask for a roll call, Madam Chair, if I could. And then also, I really wish we would have seen those amendments, Representative Frazier, that you're talking about and, you know, have laid this over instead, because I think as a committee here, that would be important for us to see, just that added information. And then also, I know that Commissioner Jacobson didn't have time to review the DE3, but I will look forward to his comments in public safety about it, because I think that's important, too, to get everybody's thoughts on that. So I'll look forward to hearing that. But thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for the good discussion and the good work.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I get to closing comments, I do want to, Rep. Keeler, like, appreciate what you shared. I know it's not always easy to tell those stories and those experiences. I've got three kids and a grandkid now, and it's tough, those stories. But there is a portion in the bill that deals with considerations to build constructive police relations with students, administrators, and educational staff. That's a part of the model making process that we directed the Pulse Board to look at. So through that piece, they could look at exactly that, if it's around uniforms or what they're wearing, if that's going to help to foster that that opportunity to build those relationships. So it doesn't explicitly say it, but it captures it enough where I think you can have those conversations. And the important piece is, because we have the Youth Council as part of this, their voice will be there, and they can absolutely be, this can be a sounding board for them to discuss how they like to see those SROs show up in their buildings in the best way that makes them feel comfortable and for it to be an inclusive environment. So thank you for sharing. I want to make sure I pointed that out for you to know as we're moving forward. So, you know, I think this has been a good discussion, a good conversation. You know, part of it, what we heard last year is that we didn't have this conversation, so we are having this conversation, although I know that there was an activity earlier to not have this conversation, but we will have this conversation, and I'm happy to have the conversation. But I'm happy to have the conversation because I know we're going to include more voices in the conversation, and I think there's voices that we often don't include, our young people, our community members. I'll go back to what I said in the beginning. We're all public servants. That includes our law enforcement. We have to be responsive to what those that we serve want to see from us. That's a mandate. That's imperative in order for us to do this thing the right way. And so that's what this bill allows for us to do. When you go through this model policy making process, it allows for those voices that are not usually in the room to be in the room. And Representative Baker, I think you agree with me. I agree with you in terms of that's going to help with this conversation, to be able to look someone in the eye and to clearly hear and understand what their concerns are, and then to be able to react to that with a possible solution is the best way to do this, I believe. I did want to clarify some things about about this bill. We're not rolling back anything in 609. The prohibition on compressive holds and restricting folks' ability to breathe with particular holds, chokeholds, that's stays in 609. That applies to our law enforcement officers. It doesn't matter if they're in a school or not in a school. They cannot do that. That would be a violation of the law. So we're not removing that. As I said earlier, if you put a kid in a prone restraint hold and you compress them to where they cannot breathe, that is a violation of the law. So that's not changing. We have the youth voices in there. The Youth Council is included as one of the groups that have to be consulted with in the conversation to work the model policy. There is bias training that law enforcement takes. We've codified that into the law. It can be explored even more in the model making process as well. And I want to just reiterate that school discipline has been taken off the table for our SROs who engage in that. SROs will tell you that they don't want to engage in school discipline. That's not their role. That doesn't help them build or foster good relationships with our kids. And I can tell you, when I was in school, and we had some officers there. They also were playing clothes, but we knew who they were. If there was a situation where I saw them put one of my friends in a hold that was dangerous and harmful, there's no way there's going to be a good relationship with myself and that person anymore. And that's what we should be working toward, that we never have to be in a situation where we have to do something like that that is going to upset the balance of the school, make that environment feel less inclusive for our kids. We have to be fighting to ensure that our kids feel safe when they come to school. For some of them, it is the one place that they can be safe. And we have to ensure that it's that way every single day, every single minute, every single hour. And that's what we're working towards here. We'll keep talking. I've enjoyed the conversations. I've said my code name is Pinata now, but that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. I encourage all the advocates to keep pushing us, to keep fighting. That's your job. We appreciate that. So we're going to keep having this conversation. We're going to come out with the best bill possible. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. And with that, Representative Frazier renews his motion to re-refer House File 3489 to the Public Safety Finance and Policy Committee. A roll call has been requested, and there will be a roll call. And again, listen carefully. We go alphabetical order. We'll be ready. Ms. Anderson.
Chair Pryor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Lee Bennett.
No.
Rep Bateberg.
No.
Rep Berg.
Yes.
Rep Feist.
Yes.
Rep Frazier.
Yes.
Rep Keeler.
Abstain.
Rep Knudsen.
No.
Rep Lee.
Rep Lee votes yes.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative
No.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
With 7 ayes, 5 nays, and 1 abstention, the motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Finance.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Yes, we have 7 ayes, 5 nays, and 1 abstention. The motion carries. House File 3489 is re-referred to Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Thank you, everyone who testified today and was part of this committee. This will conclude our business of the day, and I thank everyone for their participation. We will meet Wednesday in our regular – excuse me, I haven't adjourned the meeting yet. So if we can be quiet in the audience, I would appreciate it. And we are a committee meeting here. We will meet Wednesday in our regularly scheduled basement, B2 of the State Office Building. That's what I have in my script, that we're in the basement next time. All right. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.